You.
What's up, brother?
Not doing well, man. Not doing well.
Likewise. How's the wedding?
Wedding was sick. It was
Yeah.
at Franklin Institute.
Oh, damn.
And like the dance, the reception afterwards was like in the room where the Ben Franklin statue was. It was pretty funny.
That's sweet.
But I'm hurting
I'm
physically
sure.
from just the hangover and then the Penn State loss, got the Cowboys putting up a 50 burger on the Giants. I'm just, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not my weekend. Don't think I hit, I like went 25% betting Saturday. Didn't even bet today because I was like, I'm not gonna lose any more money.
And I know that feeling all too well.
So that's where I'm at. Why don't we start the
Welcome back to Whiteout Weekly. As always, I am Dave Barron here with my esteemed co-host, Matty Martellucci. We wish we were starting this ep off with us both shotgunning gear beers off a glorious victory Saturday. Unfortunately, we are not, as the Lions suffer their second loss of the season in
Dave,
us.
I gotta interrupt you here.
Go right ahead.
We're doing this on a Sunday. Whiteout Weekly first. I had a wedding last night. I'm brutally hungover. Physically hurting, mentally hurting from that Penn State game. I'm watching the Cowboys put a 50 burger on the Giants. I'm not ready to do this. Can't do this. We have to cancel this.
The show must go on, Matt.
All right,
The show must
this is
go
my
on.
Jordan flu game.
The Lions, it was basically a rinse and repeat of the Ohio State game. Historically great defense, historically bad offense. And it seems to be common theme where anytime they have a Fox Big Noon game where Gus and Joel Klatt are calling the game in front of a national audience, the offense is the most embarrassing form of itself and somehow finds a way to become more embarrassing each time that they're in this TV slot. And Matt, I gotta tell you, it was absolutely pathetic to see that offense on the field this weekend. They were finally able to muster that touchdown, that QB draw from Aller, but
They had two good drives all game.
yeah.
I mean, three if you want to count that one in the fourth, but they had two good drives the entire game. That's, first of all, unwatchable offense. Second of all, who's calling these freaking plays? What's going on here? Are people not getting open? What's going on here? I need answers. And we got answers.
The first domino fell on, here on Sunday afternoon with Mike Yurcich being relieved of his offensive coordinator duties at Penn State. Not wouldn't say an interesting decision here. It was definitely one that, for me, I feel was needed, as we mentioned after that Ohio State therapy session where the offense was totally inept, and it was once again in this one. And the final straw may have been that decision to go for two when they didn't have to and could have kept it a one possession game.
It blows
And
my mind.
Yurcich calls all the shots and has the entire offensive line over on the left side of the field for yet another trick play that they seem to always bring out in these big time matchups, where you don't usually see another top 10 team resorting to trick plays to
Yeah.
try to get any
On short yardage
sign of hope
situations too.
to move the ball. And that may have been the last straw, as Franklin, once again, deflecting blame in the postgame presser, saying that from a play calling standpoint, they need to do a better job of getting a young QB in a rhythm, which, yes, they very clearly did not. But ultimately, Mike Yurcich falls on the sword on this one, as he fails to complete his third full season as the Penn State offensive coordinator, Matt.
By the way, I texted my dad as soon as the news came out. I was like, Penn State fired their offensive coordinator. He goes, wow, too bad it was two games too fucking late.
Exactly.
Too fucking late. Well, that was funny. Dad joke.
So, yeah. So Yurcich had a slow start in Happy Valley in 2021, looking from a points per game standpoint. Penn State offense averaged 25 points per game, which was good for 90th in the country. 2022 averaged 35.8 points per game, which was 20th in the country. And then this year,
we do have to mention the quarterback was Sean.
We do, of course. And this year,
who had weapons though?
Did have weapons. Well, this year, an even better mark at 37.7 points per game with an 8-2 record, which is best for 14th in the country. Matt, really, the story of this year's team and this year's offense was the lack of explosive plays. Mm-hmm. So this year, Penn State, currently, after that Michigan fiasco, sits at 88th in the country in passing offense, 102nd in yards per play with just over 5 yards per play, 61st in passing efficiency, 130th out of 133 with only 25 plays of 20 plus yards. And Matt, they are dead last in all of college football with 3.4% of their total plays equating to 20 yards or more. And obviously the downfall of Yurcich this season was the two absolute eggs. I don't even know if egg is the right word to put in this scenario.
Poops,
duds, eggs. Straight up did not show up with any sort of game plan against Ohio State or Michigan. In those two games, 239 yards per game, only 13.5 points per game in both of those losses. In all of the eight wins, however, 413 yards per game, an average 43.8 points per game. But ultimately, yet again, Penn State falls victim to Michigan and Ohio State this season. Mike Yurcich falls on the sword, and James Franklin is left searching for now his sixth offensive coordinator, in which now half of them have been fired.
That's not a good sign. That's not a good sign.
Matt, it is not always the offensive coordinator's fault when you go through six of them.
Yeah, not always. Not always.
It's not the offensive coordinator's fault. They are not all
from the top.
That bad.
Starts from the top.
They are not all that bad.
Yeah.
Yes, Yurcich was an absolute dumbass in these two games, but you can't tell me that all six of those guys are the scapegoats for what is going on at the top. A lot went on, obviously, in this game. Second, the fans showed out. It was the second highest attendance game in Beaver Stadium history. So the fans were there, even for a noon game.
Wow.
And there was a lot of tension, and some may call it controversy, at the end of this one, where numerous students and fans leaning over the guardrail as Franklin was exiting the field, shouting expletives and booing in his face. And yes, there's been a ton of feedback on social media from Penn State players aimed directly at the fans for booing in this one. I think it's extremely clear that no one is booing the players in this instance. It is this entire regime, this coaching staff, and most of all, James Franklin, who now falls to 3-17 against top 10 teams, 4-16 against Ohio State and Michigan, and 0-6, Matt, in the last two seasons against Ohio State and Michigan.
Yeah, with the booing, situation, you know, it gets muddled, like 110,000 plus people booing, players coming off the field, they don't know who they're booing at, you know. So, but I respect them, first of all, for standing up for the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I don't know, I didn't like that at all. I didn't like that for the Penn State fans at all. And I'm prepared to say that Iowa, I have not forgiven them for what they did in 2021 when they jeered P.J. Musfer tearing his knee.
Mm-hmm.
I'll not forgive them, but they're not my mortal enemy anymore. I kind of, you know, I feel their pain. 10-2, 10-2. Just doing the same thing every year. I'm starting to relate with Iowa fans, and it's scaring me. Mm-hmm. The Sunday scaries are hitting hard.
I was just going to say, it is perfectly okay. I get it that it's college. It's not pro. It's different. And we're both Philly fans, so we understand what goes into booing your own team and the impact that it has.
Mm.
For someone who's the figurehead of the program, who has called out year after year about what he needs to get this program to become elite, you know, NIL money, upgraded facilities, a committed AD who's committed to winning, who he's got now with Pat Kraft. It's okay for this fan base who, just by those attendance numbers that I've shown and the impact that they've had for a program that's started off behind in NIL, but has really started to rebound quickly. And with one of, if not the largest alumni base in the country, it's okay that we want more than 10-2. Yeah. And it's okay.
That's totally fine that we want to be elite.
That a particular individual who we are locked into a long-term deal, who this was the Sunday of firings, because Jimbo Fisher was also locked in a long-term deal, and he went bye-bye. So I think Franklin's definitely feeling a little bit of the hot seat now. But it is okay for a fan base to be discouraged and be frustrated and to show that verbally.
I agree with that.
Who was making gobs of money and who has all the trust in the world, or had all the trust in the world from this fan base, to get us to that elite level. I understand that we haven't been there in quite some time, but with all the resources, all the talent that is on that field, you cannot tell me that Michigan and Ohio State are that much better than us year in and year out. There is a common denominator here. I was the last line of defense. I wanted to be the ha-ha, and we proved everyone wrong. But yet again, to lose these same two games is making myself look moronic. And God, is it frustrating, Matt. And it's honestly sickening. Yes, this is going to be the biggest hire, I guess you could call it, of Franklin's career. He's got to get this one right, because there's not too many head coaches in America that get to churn through six offensive coordinators.
Seven. It would be seven, because he'd be fired.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure to get this one right. But like I said, is ultimately, it's not just all the offensive coordinator. There's some scheme that's coming down from the head coach that has proven to not be effective in these big moments. And these big moments are where you need to be effective to get this program over the hump, which is what this fan base is looking for. And I get it that the playoffs going to expand and we'll likely get in. We're the sole beneficiaries of a 12-team playoff. And so is James Franklin. And that's nice next year, but to actually be able to compete in that playoff, you got to have better showings than what you've seen year in and year out.
Yeah.
And it's the most frustrating thing in the world, man, to lose these games year in and year out and just continue to get embarrassed on a national stage.
Going back to the booing, just to clarify, like I know it was not, hopefully it was not directed at the players. I hope that
I don't think there's any doubt in the world that was not directed.
I hope it was directed at, you know, James Franklin and the higher ups, but you know, in the muddle of that situation, stuff's going to get heated. Things are going to get said. But I'm glad that the players, you know, stuck by the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You hate to see somebody lose their job, but it just seemed like Mikey was just way over his head.
Mm-hmm.
Just way over his head. Just a vanilla offense.
Literally the next game that comes on every week. And like I said, I mentioned the stats where when we play inferior opponents extremely well. And that's where the stat padding comes into play. Like this year where they're ranked 14th points per game, they've done what they've needed to do. They've had some scares against some inferior opponents, but just the overall.
Hope Fabula has a huge part of it.
Yes, exactly. Cover Kings. But the overall concepts, like there's no slants over the middle. There's no just basic wide receiver, no basic passing plays to get a quarterback into a rhythm. And then you get the running game going. And then you take the carries away from Katron and Singleton. It just has no basic concept of the flow of the game. And yes, that's a lot to do with Yurcich. But like I said, with Franklin, man, like as a head coach, you got to be able to have that feel for the game too. You got to be able to step in and make those calls. And who knows how many of those calls, I'm sure a good bit of them, where Yurcich was probably getting overridden and saying, hey, here's what we need to do here. We need to do a read option on 3rd and 9 or run the trick play here to try to get a spark. But
that was Franklin, totally. I mean,
yeah, I mean, this was definitely a domino that needed to fall. Like I said, a lot of pressure on this next hire, and this offense has to get better. There's too many skill position players. Yes, the wide receivers have been in question, but when you have guys like Katron Allen, Nick Singleton, Drew Aller, Keandre Lambert-Smith is a very good Power 5 wide receiver, and the recruits that they have in, unless you're telling me that they're all that bad, are not so bad that they just cannot get open against Michigan. And a lot of that has to do with scheme and just helping your skill players out and putting them in positions to succeed. And that just hasn't been the case in these big time games.
So we're going to circle back to a short list of some replacements that might become the new Penn State and Nittany Lions offensive coordinator, but I'm watching Red Zone here, and we need a guy like Dan Campbell, like an offensive coordinator like Dan Campbell, who's just like gives anything for his guys.
Mm-hmm.
This guy doesn't have a lot of weapons on offense. Amon-Ra St. Brown's an elite wide receiver. He's got a great running game, 2 backs. What do you know? Similar to Penn State. Someone like that, someone that has that kind of concept in their offensive scheme that can bring this offense to life. Because it was just absolutely lifeless in the games that mattered most. And to continue with that, the first big play of the game came on that 3rd and goal on our first drive. Called a faded Cephas. I don't hate the call. He did make that great catch. But, you know, we were in a full house formation most of the game. You would like to see them pound the rock there.
Mm-hmm.
Just pound it in. And if they don't get it 4th and 1, pound the rock again. Don't get it. You have them backed up. Other thing earlier in the game, the 4th and 1 punt. We've proven that we can execute the brotherly shove. And like I said, we were in full house like most of that game. Like you have to be aggressive in those situations against Michigan. It just infuriated me seeing those calls. But I mean, it wasn't really all on him. I haven't seen the All-22, but doesn't seem like the wide receivers were creating any kind of separation downfield. it might be his play calling, you know, him trying to take shots. Maybe the comments are, or the media comments are getting to him, which is, you know, sign number one that you should not have this guy as your offensive coordinator. He's listening to media comments. But it was just, you know, a full team effort on that loss. Offense to defense. Guys on defense just not maintaining their assignments. The dagger cutback by Blake Corum on the touchdown run. You know, just not maintaining gaps, not maintaining their contain. It was possibly the hype of the game. Like the big moment to try to make a big play in that big game, but it was just an all-out F.
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense, ultimately what it came... I mean, for God's sakes, Michigan ran the ball every single play in the second half. What was it, 33 straight run plays?
Right here. Where is it?
And I believe the number was 7 or 8. I think it was 7 or 8 drives that Penn State had across that time span where they had the ball where it was a one possession game. And they just couldn't get anything going and get down the field and tie the game up. It was the same exact thing that happened in the Ohio State game. Defense played, yeah, they had missed assignments and they gave up some big plays. But they did enough in a top 10 matchup to allow this team to be able to win the game.
No, for sure. I didn't mean any.
Yeah, no. No, there were absolutely crucial plays. You know, I look back to the 4th-and-1 where Kalen King had McCarthy dead to rights.
Oh, God.
Play on him. He gets the first down. That was crucial. And like you mentioned, there was a couple where Abdul Carter, I think it was Abdul or Chop, got sucked in the gap and Corum or Edwards had that cutback. There was definitely big plays.
Two of them were out of position, yeah.
Yeah. But this boiled down to just a complete lack of an ability to put a drive together to get down the field and put points on the board. And you mentioned that first big play, the third goal to Cephas. It was a pretty good ball. Should Aller have played better in this game? Yes. Am I going to put all the fault on Drew Aller? No. You know, that's two big games this year where he hasn't looked his best, but we're talking about a week ago where he was absolutely lights out. So the ability's there.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, on the big stage in these big moments, the play calling is just totally different. And they go into this shell where they're just ultra conservative. And that showed on that first drive where you have to get touchdowns against Michigan, and they take the 3 points. They go a 3rd-and-goal fade to Cephas. Like I said, it was an okay ball, but it's 3rd-and-goal. So that's a ballsy play there. They take the 3, and then Michigan goes down and scores. And they just weren't able to put consistent drives together to chew off the clock. I mean, Michigan won the time of possession battle. The defense was on the field for 33 minutes this game.
Crazy.
And Penn State usually wins the possession battle aside from these big games. And a lot of it has to do with the conservative play calling. They were behind the chains again, and they were not effective on third downs. And I knew it was coming in the press conference when Franklin said we were not effective on third downs. Like, but, you know, you had one test matchup to get ready for this one, and you just put out the same output. This was the same exact game as the Ohio State game. It was a historically great defense who laid everything out on the line to give this team a chance to win. And the offensive scheme and play calling and execution just wasn't there. And that's the most depressing and disappointing part of this is, yeah, we're going to wrap up and probably be 10-2. And that's a cool season. But, like, how many times are we going to sing
cool,
this song?
Dude.
Like, yeah,
I'm gonna win. Penn State, let's win.
Yeah, like, oh man, oh.
So, going back to your point of, I think you used predictable for Yurchich. We had 12 straight runs on first down.
Mm-hmm.
12. So you think the opposing defensive coordinators are going to be like after the 8th or 9th, like, hey, I think they're going to run it on first down. She's like, come on, dude. Just get out. Like, and then the 13th play was a play action play, but incomplete. And then I lost track, but I would bet that 85% of first down calls were running plays.
Mm-hmm.
He is just too predictable, too vanilla. It was abysmal to watch. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so my biggest, one of numerous biggest complaints about this game, adjustments in the second half. We tweeted out the third quarter, the biggest game. And I don't think anyone really expected Michigan to go straight jumbo package with seven potential NFL starting caliber linemen in the game. Like, that was just like a galaxy brain move by that coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Finished with 227 rushing yards, and like you said, they dominated the clock. They didn't pass the ball in the second half. They passed it one time, and Kalen Kane got a pass interference.
Mm-hmm.
They ran 30 times for 122 yards. So it's just like, no, Manny Diaz did everything he could, same with those linebackers, to stop that jumbo package. But it's just like the halftime adjustments on offense were not there. And again, going just back to the missed assignments, we had 10 total missed tackles, which is just like, you can't have that. You can't have that against a team like Michigan, especially a running team like Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joel Klatt during the game, they had a dumb little graphic about how Michigan is a boa constrictor, and that's dead on. It's exactly what they did to us. Boa constricted us, had us hope in the first half a little bit, and then just slowly, slowly, slowly squeezed us to death.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, for me, both of our impact players, I noticed I had Nick Singleton, who, I mean, the first series, he had a couple good runs, had one run where he carried a couple guys for a first down, and then just nothing after that. So I don't know what in the world is going on with Carmen Sandiego. Just kidding. Nick Singleton. And you had Aller, who we said, you know, we're not putting all that on him. But to wrap it up, for me, obviously today, Sunday scary's hitting hard. But I'm in a better place with Penn State. And I'm kind of creating a spin zone in my head to where we're just 1 year off. 1 year off from final, I guess it would be final four next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really for me, obviously glad that something happened. Obviously you don't, when someone's job's at stake, serious business, but the fact, I think this shows the magnitude of the situation, the fact that this was the first ever in-season firing during this regime in the 10 years that are almost 10 years that Franklin's been here. So I think the fact that they didn't allow Yurcich to finish out the year is definitely speaks volumes to the magnitude of where the expectations are and when this program should be there. You don't find it too often that when a team's 8-2, the OC gets fired.
We would wait to the end of the season.
Yeah, it's so, a little bit different landscape. Right. And also, Texas A&M, like I mentioned, fired Jimbo Fisher after a 51-10 win. So the expectations are sky high. And this is the last chance. I know the guy's got 9 years left on his deal, but this is really, he's got to nail this hire. And he also has to allow whoever they bring in to run the offense.
James, don't touch the offense. Bring in someone who that's his only job. Just a Dan Campbell-esque offense coordinator. That's all I'm asking for.
Yeah, they need to bring in someone who can create some explosive plays, who has a track record, and also can bode well and help continue to develop Drew. Because I'm not out on Drew. Yes, he struggled, and I know there's a lot of folks that are saying, hey, put Prabula in. And Prabula is that mold that fits what Franklin wants to do. But if you truly want to tap out the max potential of this team, you need to bring someone in that's going to be able to untap Drew Aller. Because there's not too many times where you have a quarterback who's ranked number one in the country who's just an absolute dud. And like we were saying, literally a week ago, he had his best collegiate start and was lights out. So the talent is there.
Yeah.
So
multiple times.
So let's talk through the short list, Matt. So potential options that are out there. You got the first one that's come to a lot of people's minds and that was immediately thrown out there is Joe Moorhead.
I love it. I'm not going to lie. I love it.
So, former Penn State offense coordinator.
Coming home. Play that montage.
Beautiful. So, the former Penn State OC was the OC during the Big Ten title run. Left, was not fired. He left for the Mississippi State head coaching job. Struggled a little bit there, and has since now at Akron, where he struggled. Akron's just a tough program to try to win at, so that's where it could be enticing, especially with the discretionary income that they have for the coordinator roles now. Could pay him a little bit more to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an intriguing one. A couple other ones that are out there. Jaywan Sider, who current running back head coach, was already announced today that him and Ty Howell, the tight ends coach, will be calling plays for the remainder of the season.
Love Sider.
I think Sider obviously already has the relationship with the current players and with the recruits. One of the best recruiting position coaches in the country. Very clearly wants to be an OC. So a little bit of a dicey moment here where he'll definitely be up for the role if he's not the splashy hire that would garner the headlines. But I think it would go a long way for the guys that are here and the recruits that are coming in. Like I said, he's a great recruiter, and you would hate to lose a guy like that if he weren't to get the role. So I don't know what his intentions would be if he didn't get it.
Yeah.
But he's obviously an option. He's got a little 2 to 3 game runway here where he can really prove something. So definitely excited to see that.
And it definitely helps that he's the running back coach.
Yeah.
We're, you know, primarily a running team.
Yeah, for sure.
Best, I can maintain to say it, best running backs in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's able to utilize those guys, that's, again, the Dan Campbell-esque offense coordinator I want.
Definitely. And then a couple other names that have been floating out there. I think Joe Brady is a little bit more of a dream. Also a little bit of uncertainty out there just because obviously he had the weapons at LSU. It was a offensive coordinator's dream where he had Burrow, Jamar Chase, Terrence Marshall, and Justin Jefferson. Was a former PSU grad assistant during that Big Ten title run. So he's got ties back to the program. Currently, he's Josh Allen's QB coach. So it's hard to imagine that a guy would want to walk away from that. But you never know.
Josh Allen is struggling this year.
Yeah.
Tied for lead league in interceptions.
Mm-hmm. And then another name that's floating out there is former Kent State head coach and current Colorado OC Sean Lewis, who's had a little bit of feuding with Coach Prime, especially with his distaste for how Colorado's season has gone over the last few weeks. But Sean Lewis, very bright offensive mind, So he would definitely be what I would call a splashy hire if they were to get him. A couple other names that are out there are Andy Ludwig, Utah's offensive coordinator, who would be a big get. And I think anytime you have a in-season firing like this, usually it's to get a jump on the offensive coordinator market. Not that there's really a prominent market right now, but you would think that Franklin has his sights set on someone due to the fact that he was willing to make the move now, even though it was needed. Mm-hmm. But would be hard pressed to think that him and Pat Kraft and the regime definitely have their sights set on someone.
And that's where you kind of wonder whether the Juwan Sider being promoted to OC is kind of like a tryout. It's like, all right,
yeah,
let's see what you can do these next two games. And if our offense is just absolutely clicking, I mean, we're facing Rutgers and Michigan State, but depending on what he can do, you know, in those two games, he could be a potential hire. But yeah, I think you nailed it. The next hire needs to be somebody who can unlock Drew Aller. And it may be that quarterback guru, Brad Medler on Twitter, who works with the young QBs. I'll send him a bag. Bring him up to Penn State.
Give him the bag.
So that will do it for our, I guess we'll call it a town circle of Penn State football. Rough weekend, physically, mentally. Sunday scaries are just, like I said, three times already, just hovering over me, just ready to pounce. But we will continue to fight on throughout the season. We'll have another episode coming out this week previewing the Rutgers game. And thank you all for following, listening, however you do it, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube Shorts. We really appreciate it. And we notice it every single day. The new followers, the new everything. It's awesome. It's awesome to see it grow. It's awesome to see you guys interact with us. And like I always say, we're going to keep doing this till the wheels fall off. And for a fourth time, thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys. Here's the 10-2, baby.
10-2.